Bloomberg Audio Studios. Podcasts, radio, news. You're listening to the Bloomberg Balance of Power podcast. Catch us live weekdays at noon and 5 p.m. Eastern on Apple CarPlay and Android Auto with the Bloomberg Business app. Listen on demand wherever you get your podcasts or watch us live on YouTube.
Checking on the markets as we kick off the post-holiday trading week. Thank you so much. Obviously, is a positive one for equity markets today, and that means that any money already housed in now millions of Trump accounts across the country after the initial $1,000 in seed money provided by the Treasury for children that have been born since 2025, that money could be posing a little bit of a return today, though we'll see how long it goes. Of course, the U.S. Treasury argues that if that $1,000 in seed money stays in these accounts and the maximum annual contribution of $5,000 is contributed every year, these accounts, by the time a child turns 18, could grow to $271,000. That is the investment the administration says it is making in America's children, as we heard from the president as he rang the opening bell this morning in the Oval Office.
Between individual contributions and the seed funds, $800 million in new capital will be invested in the stock market for America's children this week. And I also think that we're going to be putting numbers in the budget, which will be really spectacular, because it's really not costing us anything.
He did, in fact, ring the bell as it sat right on the Resolute desk. It wasn't an actual, I thought maybe, Kaylee, they'd have like a Diet Coke style button where he would press the button and it would start the trading, but he actually took a gong and, you know, took it to the gong, something like that. He says he's going to take the bell with him maybe into the ballroom. Either way, they're off and running, and this isn't the only thing the president is dealing with today. As we mentioned earlier, he'll be wheels up to Ankara later on this evening in the new Air Force One for this week's NATO summit. Helping us put this all together is Bloomberg Washington correspondent Tyler Kendall. Can we start with the accounts? This seems to be pretty good politics for a president, whether you're hearing from the left or the right. It's one of the most bipartisan issues he's ever gotten his hands around.
Widely bipartisan, Joe and Kaylee, and comes at a really critical time for this White House, as we know that the administration is contending with what has been headwinds around how Americans feel about the economy with the backdrop of the conflict in Iran. Now, as you both went through, this really also highlights the administration's policy pushes when it comes to working with the private sector. How many times did we hear President Trump highlight Michael Dell standing behind him? Also, that we got recently in the last week, this commitment from Micron, $250 million that will benefit children in Idaho. It is interesting to see how all of these companies have their own provisions for how the money will be used, but more than 50 of them so far, according to our tally, have pledged support, whether that's with employer matches or additional seed funding. And it was interesting to hear both the Treasury Secretary, but also President Trump, use the word legacy. It is very clear that this is something under the One Big Beautiful Bill that we know the administration wants to tout. But in that clip there that you heard from the president, he seemed to indicate that maybe we'd ask Congress for additional funding to keep it going, which, of course, opens up some questions on exactly what's on the legislative agenda going forward.
Yeah, maybe that would work itself into reconciliation 3.0 or be for a future presidential administration to try to extend, as obviously this only runs through 2028 in terms of the federal seed money. That is, domestic politics aside, while this may be a win for the president, his focus is going to shift to foreign policy pretty quickly, like by tonight as he boards the plane for the NATO summit. Tyler, knowing he spent time over the weekend speaking with the presidents of both Ukraine and Russia, does that suggest that he's going to want to see or have that top his priority list at this summit?
So we had actually heard from the president back at the G7 summit, where he openly told reporters that if they're able to get the Iran situation under control, I believe was his wording, then perhaps there can be some renewed focus when it comes to Ukraine. We know certainly our European allies would like to start to draw more attention there, considering the talks at this point have all but stalled between Russia, Ukraine, and the U.S. Perhaps we could see a push to help jumpstart those talks. We also know that the Ukrainian president, in his now confirmed bilateral meeting with President Trump, is going to have some pretty specific asks when it comes to additional security assistance, including the potential for another Patriot missile battery, something that has been a relatively contentious issue here in Washington. As Joe mentioned at the top of the program, we saw this bombardment from Russia, which really exposed Ukraine's gaps in their air defense systems overnight.
Well, there's a lot more to talk about there, of course, on both of these fronts, Tyler, whether it's the accounts, whether it's NATO, the president coming off of this holiday weekend. Is he going to be watching the game tonight on the plane? Because this is going to be a point of controversy that actually follows him. Belgium, incidentally, is paying 2%, not 5%. In its defense spending to NATO, and the president will surely be ready to call them out.
Yeah, I mean, everything is diplomacy at this point. Perhaps this is soccer diplomacy. We'll have to see where it goes. No doubt defense spending will be at the forefront of the conversation. It's going to highlight, really, and underscore everything that we're going to talk about in the next few days. Yep. You had the NATO Secretary General Mark Rutte just earlier today saying that he's demanding, that was the word, our allies to put forward some more concise plans when it comes to how they will boost defense spending. As you both know, 5% by 2035, that is the goal from this White House. Our analysts at Bloomberg Economics say the top five European economies are at 2.5%, but they caution a lot of countries are not on track to meet that higher, more lofty goal.
All right, Bloomberg's Washington correspondent Tyler Kendall, thank you so much. Of course, Joe and I spoke with the Secretary General just a few weeks ago after his Oval Office meeting with President Trump, and he told us that it's really about the defense industrial base. You can only invest the money and spend it so quickly because there's so much that needs to happen in terms of the ability to actually ramp up that portion of it. That said, it hasn't stopped the Secretary General and the President from demanding more of the members of NATO. The President, of course, repeatedly for months has been talking about other countries need to spend more and that he was disappointed with them for not stepping up to help the United States in the Strait of Hormuz, specifically in the aftermath of the operations being launched in Iran. This is what the President said over the course of March and April about the alliance.
We're very disappointed with NATO. Because NATO has done absolutely nothing. They don't want to help us defend the strait, and they're the ones that need it.
I'm very disappointed in NATO. We pay trillions of dollars for NATO, and they weren't there for us.
He feels that they weren't there for the United States. So how does that color his travels and the summit ahead this week? For more, we turn now to the former U.S. ambassador to NATO during the Obama administration. Ambassador Ivo Dodler is back with us on Bloomberg TV and radio. Ambassador, it's good to have you. As we consider what will come of this summit in Ankara, knowing that the president himself has suggested he's really only attending as a favor to Turkish President Erdogan, who he has a good relationship with, where would you set the bar? What is a good outcome for the alliance here, knowing how fragile the alliance with the United States seems to be in particular?
Well, to be frank, I think the bar is pretty low, basically, that the meeting happens and that nothing extraordinary comes out of it, much like the meeting a year ago when NATO agreed to this 5% target by 2035. There will be some review about how NATO countries are doing when it comes to spending. By the way, the United States doesn't spend 5% of GDP on defense. It's important to point that out. There are NATO countries who are spending more as a percentage of GDP on defense than the United States. That said, I think what everybody is hoping for is that it will be a quiet meeting, much like the G7 a few weeks ago. Perhaps some good news on the question of support for Ukraine, but no real fireworks. That is now where the bar is set. We're now no longer looking towards NATO or these summit meetings to fundamentally change the direction of the alliance. The best thing that can be hoped for is that the alliance lives another day.
Well, you are right. I think we're paying about 3.6%, if my figures are correct, Ambassador. What do you make of the post? There were several of them that the president made on Truth Social about NATO ahead of the summit. This one from late yesterday, he writes, ridiculous for the USA to continue along this one-sided path when the relationship is not reciprocal. They were not there for us. 3 exclamation points. Doesn't that say everything? How do you have a meeting after that? Why even go?
Well, I mean, as he said, he's going because President Erdogan, his good friend, asked him to. This is the same president who, of course, is putting his opposition in jail and putting him on trial for trumped up reasons. I mean, clearly, the president doesn't really understand how NATO works. This isn't about whether the European countries should be helping the United States when it comes to Iran and war in which they were neither consulted nor were asked to participate until after the fact and after it took place. And it ignores all the other ways in which the European countries are bolstering American security. First and foremost, the war could not have happened with regard to Iran without the support of basing structures that exist in Europe, most of which were available for the war against Iran, for refueling of airplanes, and in many cases for launching bombers, strategic bombers, as they did from the UK. So the idea that NATO and Europeans didn't participate, quote, weren't there for us, just ignores the fundamental geographic reality. More importantly, our allies, of course, have been there for us. NATO has invoked in its entire 77-year history Article 5, the collective defense commitment, one time, which is when the United States was attacked by al-Qaeda terrorists on September 11, 2001. At that point, NATO not only invoked Article 5, it participated in military operations, including in Afghanistan, at great sacrifice in blood and treasure. More than 1,000 European allied countries' lives were lost in this war, which was not a war that the United States, that they wanted to fight or was even important for their national interest. It was what they did because of allies. And unfortunately, the president has fundamentally decided that what NATO is about is who pays how much, and secondly, whether they will do what the United States want them to do. As he said, all he cares for is loyalty. That's not the basis of an alliance. It's a shared interest in the security of the North Atlantic area. When it was threatened on September 11, the Europeans were there, and the hope that the Europeans now have is when it is threatened, as it is today, by Russia, the United States will be there.
Well, let's talk more about that, ambassadors. Joe and I mentioned we know that the president did speak with both Vladimir Putin and Volodymyr Zelensky over the weekend. There will be a bilateral meeting with Zelensky at the summit this week. When the president has repeatedly suggested that he does think both sides want to see a negotiated end to this war, is the time actually ripe for that? What would be different about the circumstances both Ukraine and Russia now find themselves in compared to when we've had head fakes on this previously?
Yeah, so the time is getting riper, so to say, because Russia is on its back foot. Its offensives on the ground in Ukraine have stalled, in fact, are starting to be reversed slowly, but nevertheless reversed. The cost that the Russian soldiers on the front line are undergoing is extraordinary. About 35,000, just remember, 35,000 dead or seriously wounded each and every month. And the replacement of new recruits is smaller than that. 97% of those people are killed or wounded by drones, no longer by direct fire from Ukrainian forces. And of course, Ukraine is now targeting Russian energy infrastructure, leading to fundamental problems at the pump. For the first time, Russia, which is a petroleum-producing country, is thinking about importing petroleum from India. And Ukraine has launched a major, major effort against Crimea, the area, the part that was the peninsula that was taken away from Ukraine by Russia back in 2014. So in some sense, yes, Ukraine is on the march. The Russians are feeling it in terms of lives. They're feeling it in terms of treasure. They're feeling it in terms of public opinion. This is a good time to move forward. Yeah. But it requires Vladimir Putin to understand that the best he can get is what he has now. And he has insisted he wants more. And that has been the problem all along.
Ambassador, I know we didn't bring you on to talk about this, but the Royal Belgian Football Association is using words like astonished. They're investigating all potential options to protect the fundamental principles of fair play in our sport. After apparently the president got the red card reversed here on Florent Balogun. If this is true and he picked up the phone and managed to accomplish this, what's your reaction? Is this the new way that this is done?
Well, I mean, Donald Trump's not known as a man who plays by the rules. And we're now seeing that being translated into the World Cup, which is, after all, the biggest sporting event in the world. There's nothing like it. It unites people in around the world to look at the game of all games. And that game is now seen as being rigged because the president of the United States personally intervened on behalf of the U.S. national team. It's shameful. I see that UEFA, the European Football Association, has also pointed out that this is crossing a red line that shouldn't have been crossed. So, but that's the world we now live in. A president of the United States.
He did confirm earlier that he made the phone call. Ivo Dalder, thank you for the time, Ambassador. It's great to see you. Alongside Kaylee Lyons, I'm Joe Matthew. We'll assemble our panel next on Bloomberg.
Stay with us on Balance of Power. We'll have much more coming up after this.
You're listening to the Bloomberg Balance of Power podcast. Catch us live weekdays at noon and 5 p.m. Eastern on Apple CarPlay and Android Auto with the Bloomberg Business app. You can also listen live on Amazon Alexa from our flagship New York station. Just say, Alexa, play Bloomberg 1130.
We're still recovering from the 4th of July festivities, the semi-quincentennial, and all of the poor air quality that came in the aftermath of those celebrations. But the celebrations maybe will continue depending on the outcome of tonight's match between the U.S. and Belgium. Yes, I would imagine a lot of people will be staying up late for this one, just like they had to stay up late to watch the fireworks on Saturday night. And of course, the game may be influenced by the fact that the star forward for the U.S. men's national team, Valerian Balogun, is going to be playing. He was supposed to be suspended for this game, remember, because of the red card in the last match, and many people, fans of the U.S. national team, thought that the ref made a bad call. I understand this. I think refs make bad calls all the time. I yell frequently at my TV. The problem is, I'm but a humble journalist. I have no power to influence the situation. Apparently, someone did have power to influence the situation, though, and that would be President Trump. Who said today, confirmed, that he did indeed call the head of FIFA, Gianni Infantino, and ask them to review that red card play.
So I saw the play, and I'm a person that loves sports and was a good athlete, and I understand sports really well. And that wasn't a foul. That wasn't even an infraction. That was two guys running full speed that happened to crash into each other. He didn't do anything wrong, and he's our best player, or one of our best players, a very vital player, and he gave him a red card. But how do you penalize him for a game that hasn't been played yet? It's very unfair. You can't do that. So, yes, I asked for a review by FIFA. I spoke to a man who's highly respected, and by the way, whose level of respect has gone up tenfold. And he was good before this started, but, you know, he really pushed it in this country. I'm the one that got them to do it. It was not Biden. Biden was asleep. I got him to do it.
So any questions that existed this morning about whether the president was directly involved in this were put to rest immediately by the president himself and Senator Ted Cruz, who was there and made clear this is partly why the president had the FIFA trophy actually in the Oval Office for so long. Remarkable reporting today by the likes of the Wall Street Journal and Axios. The TikTok of the events that happened behind the scenes to unglue all of this. Howard Lutnick, the Commerce Secretary, who led the delegation to the Bosnia game, was on the flight home when it all began. He read FIFA's rules, began mapping out how the U.S. might contest the call. Enter Andrew Giuliani, yes, Rudy Giuliani's son, who's the director of the White House Task Force on the World Cup. He started calling the lawyers and supporters to pressure FIFA, all setting up the president for this eventful phone call that he just described, knowing, of course, that he's good friends with Johnny, as he likes to call him. And so we wanted to get to this, at least the political aspects of it. But before we bring in our political panel, we want to get to the real sports here of the matter with Randall Williams, Bloomberg News Business of Sports reporter. He's with us from World Headquarters in New York. And Randall, I love that you're on the program. We're big fans of yours. I never thought we'd actually have a reason to meet. What do you think of all of this? What's going through your head, and how much of an international incident did the president just set up for tonight?
It's a firestorm. It's an absolute firestorm. And what I would tell you is that all of the lawyers on these planes that, you know, contacted FIFA, that were trying to figure out an appeal for Flo Balogun, they were doing all of their work. But there was one superpower some one superpowered person who could press their thumb on this scale, and it was President Trump. And there was a lot of murkiness around what happened, you know, who called and what was said. But President Trump said it himself. He made a call and asked them to review. But if the lawyers were already reviewing things, and FIFA rules at the time of all of our understanding before yesterday was that Flo was to sit out today's match. And so President Trump asked them to review, and now Flo is playing.
Wow.
Well, so is there precedent for this, Randall, in any previous
in some
World
aspect.
Cup? Just how rare is it for this to happen?
And not exactly at the knockout stage. So if you recall months ago, Cristiano Ronaldo received a red card. He, you know, sat out one match, and then he was supposed to sit out two matches of the qualifying rounds. FIFA waived that, and so Ronaldo was allowed to play. Now, the issue with that, in effect, is that Ronaldo has said this is going to be his last World Cup. If this is truly his last World Cup, and then how is he going to serve those two suspended games? Flo's suspension, similarly, has been, you know, pushed off. So when is he going to serve that suspension, if he is going to at all? It's one of those things where the rules that FIFA has about appeals is the issue here. The larger issue, however, is that President Trump pressed his thumb on the scale, asked them to review it, and FIFA, you know, they reviewed it and found a loophole that allows Flo to play. So what's stopping the UK, who had a player go off yesterday with a red card as well, from calling FIFA right. and saying, look, we think similarly. Why can't our guy play?
Yeah, well, I don't think Keir Starmer is going to get that same phone call.
I don't think so either.
That Donald Trump had. The Royal Belgian Football Association, Randall, says it's astonished, investigating all potential options. There'll be some sort of appeal process, or is this as good as done?
It's as good as done. There is no FIFA, you know, they made a ruling, and the rules were the rules in saying that, you know, Flo was not to play against Belgium. Then they went back against that rule. I think we would all be astonished if Flo was not going to play today. I expect him to. I think the world should expect him to. But the global, you know, soccer ecosystem is at a loss for words. They have never seen anything like this. And it just begs the question as to what the rules are and who can press for what.
Indeed, it does. Just quickly, Randall, 30 seconds. You saw the play. Did it deserve a red card, in your opinion?
By the rules, yes. Now, do I think? But I think the rules are bad. I think that if it's incidental contact, that it shouldn't. You know, you shouldn't have to sit out. Now, do I think that President Trump should have pressed his thumb on the scale? Absolutely not.
Wow.
All right, that's the take from Randall Williams, Bloomberg nice Business job, and Sports Randall. Reporter. Really appreciate you joining us live
Thank
from World Headquarters
me.
In New York. And let's get the take of our political panel as well as we assemble Lester Munson, a Republican strategist and principal of the international practice at BGR Group, alongside Jamie Jackson, Democratic strategist, former senior counsel to House Majority Leader Steny Hoyer, and founder of Vantage Global Media. Welcome to you both. Lester, I got to come to you on this one. Is the president using his power here for good, or does this raise serious concerns as these matches move forward?
This, Kaylee, may be the most popular thing he's done all year. There is no rule against calling the head of FIFA. I think the head of FIFA likes hearing from heads of state. In fact, Keir Starmer, who was mentioned earlier, called to about the timing of England's match yesterday. So this is something FIFA does. We're the home team. I know something about sports, too. The home team is supposed to, you know, get a little bit of an edge here. Good for President Trump for calling. The penalty seemed way out of bounds. And don't you want to have the best players play against the best players? I think everybody wins here. I really don't understand why this is a problem.
What do you think about this, Jamie? Are you glad your president picked up the phone and took action here?
I agree with Les. This definitely unified American soccer fans. But ultimately, I think the president should get out of this one. You know, regardless of what happens, whether the U.S. male team wins, it's always going to be a stigma as to whether or not there was a fairness issue with regard to this call. And so personally, I think they should have played with one less man and moved forward, because I think the fact also that the game is happening in North America, it makes this look even more untoward when you have the president putting his finger on the scale. So I think he should have stayed out of this one. But to Les's point, I definitely think this may have unified athletes and soccer fans.
Well, and perhaps unified the Belgians against the U.S., at least for this. Oh, we just got a headline from FIFA, a statement. FIFA has rejected Belgium's appeal on Balogun's red card. All right. We were just talking about this with Randall, that there was potentially an appeal process, but apparently that appeal will not go forward, and he will be playing this evening as planned. So that's incredibly timely news. But let's talk about the Belgians or the Europeans as the European Football Association. Lester obviously has taken issue with this, knowing that the president is about to head not to Brussels, where NATO is headquartered, but to the NATO summit in Ankara. Is this going to create any issues diplomatically?
Yeah. Which international organization is he disrupting more? Is it NATO or is it FIFA? I think that's the big question of the week. A lot of the things President Trump has done with respect to NATO are positive. He's causing member states to increase their defense budgets and related budgets for intelligence and things like that. That's a good thing. Some of the rhetoric's over the top, and clearly our allies are not thrilled with what happened over Greenland last year. So there are some issues here to be sorted out. President Trump remains the center of attention now of the soccer world and NATO world. I think he's exactly where he wants to be. We'll see how this kind of plays out with American voters come November. But I think you do have to give President Trump some credit here for being the man of the week, for sure.
How quickly we forget Greenland. Jamie, will there be takeaways from this NATO summit, or is the whole point not to make news?
This may be another U.S.-China summit where there's a lot of big rhetoric, but unfortunately not a lot of tangible takeaways. I mean, it's my hope that the president goes in and reaffirms the U.S. commitment to this longstanding partnership. I mean, even the own Secretary of State, Marco Rubio, put forward legislation to block any U.S. president from leaving NATO without congressional approval. And so the president may be alone with regard to tension with NATO, but I'm hoping that he's there to really get some serious business done. Talks with Ukraine and Russia need to continue. There needs to be more security cooperation dialogue around normalizing shipping in the Strait of Hormuz. And the president also has kind of some of these one-off tensions, what we saw with the prime minister of Italy saying that she needs a restraining order. So I hope the president can put some of his personal issues aside and really get some business done while he's over there in Turkey.
All right, Jamie, thanks for a great panel, both of you. Jamie Jackson, Vantage Global Media, Lester Munson, BGR Group, and Kaylee, we're hearing again from FIFA. Apparently, the Royal Belgian Football Association was not party to proceedings and has no standing to appeal. I think we are done here. The game starts at 8 o'clock.
Yep, on procedural grounds, FIFA rejects the appeal, and Balogun will be playing tonight against Belgium. It's a match we're all going to watch.
Stay with us on Balance of Power. We'll have much more coming up after this.
You're listening to the Bloomberg Balance of Power podcast. Catch us live weekdays at noon and 5 p.m. Eastern on Apple CarPlay and Android Auto with the Bloomberg Business app. You can also listen live on Amazon Alexa from our flagship New York station. Just say, Alexa, play Bloomberg 1130.
The questions we have, though, more broadly about the markets, what it means for the Trump accounts and how they might both meet, we now pose to Joe Lavornia, the chief economist at SMBC Americas, has spent some time, of course, as the president's chief economic advisor in the first term and was former counselor to Secretary Scott Bessent at the Treasury Department in this term before going back out into the wild. Joe, it's great to see you. I'm sure that this is an idea that you're in favor of, and most Democrats and Republicans seem to be meeting in the middle on this one. I'm curious if there's an actual impact on the market, though. When you show up with hundreds of millions of dollars to invest, will we see it in the indexes?
In the past week, Joe, thank you for having me on again. In the past week, about $800 million did go into the market. The market's so big that you're looking at trillions and trillions of dollars of market cap. I think the bigger issue, Joe, is the fact that it gives young boys and girls that are just newly born, and of course those that don't even qualify for the $1,000 but then could get the $5,000 contribution up to age 18. The point is they become young capitalists. They learn the powers of compound interest, and they become owners in the American system. I think that's the big part. I'm not really sure it's going to lift the market on its own. The earnings have been excellent, And I wish, you know, if I was a political pundit, I'd be telling my former friends, my friends and former colleagues, look, talk about the Trump accounts as much as you can, because I could tell you it was hugely bipartisan. People on both sides of the aisle really liked it. And I think it's a great program that we'll look back decades from now and say, wow, this was a great way for us to, you know, be, you know, to democratize the stock market, if you will.
Mm-hmm. Well, so is this going to be, Joe, the lasting long-term positive economic impact from last year's one big beautiful bill, knowing that a lot of the, say, larger tax refunds that came as a result of that legislation were then eroded by higher gas prices that we'd seen earlier this year and perhaps didn't have the kind of stimulative juice you may have thought for that reason?
Well, the thing is, on the one big beautiful bill, to me, the big part of it was the CapEx, permanency of the CapEx, and then also the factories. You could fully expense. So we're having an economic boom. It's not the disinflationary boom I thought it was, in part because of what happened in the Middle East, but it's a boom with some pricing power, which means the Fed will be hiking rates. Of course, as you know, the AI spend is just remarkable, and that's leading to these huge earnings. That huge earnings is powering the stock market, even though the performance of the equity market has been quite incredible. You know, the earnings have been there, so the economy is still really healthy. I'd like to see inflation lower. That to me is a problem, but the general contours of the economy are in good shape, and the one big beautiful bill is a large part of it.
Where's your head on the AI spend right now, Joe? It's been a manic market. It's a bubble one day. We're just catching, barely starting. We're in the second inning the next day. There's a catch-up trade. There's a FOMO trade. There's a YOLO trade. But the market is trying to figure out if we're due for a correction, if we've maybe gotten a little over our skis here. President of the United States just today was talking about in the Oval Office how quickly data centers can go up, for instance, in this country because of the red tape that he has cut. And he said it's the only reason that we are beating and will beat China in the AI race. What does that mean for the investor?
Right now, for the investor, Joe, it's an arms race. And at some point, you know, clearly the spending will slow. But unlike the internet boom back in the late 90s, when there weren't a lot of earnings behind those companies, this time around, there is tremendous amount of earnings. And you know, having been in the markets for a while and seeing what the internet could do, or the promised internet, it was pretty remarkable. But the AI and what these technologies can do and what I'm using them for are truly stunning. So to me, the fundamentals match the hype. You know, will it slow at some point? Absolutely. But I don't think it's going to slow yet. Historically, the equity market does not peak in the summer months or doesn't hit its high typically in the summer months. It's going to have some room to run. If the Fed hikes rates, then maybe we'll have a correction. But that does not mean a bear market or a recession or anything terrible like that.
If the Fed hikes rates, Joe, and you told us last time you joined us that you did think that maybe in the cards for this year, that certainly rate cuts were not going to be something the Fed would be able to pursue. In the aftermath of Thursday's jobs report, are you feeling as confident around the hike idea?
Yes, I do. I mean, Kevin Warsh was clear that they're not going to look at one data point. They're going to look at trends. Unfortunately, the inflation trends aren't great at the moment. But even in July, I don't expect the Fed to hike in July. You know, Bloomberg has the probabilities at about 25%. What's interesting, and what I'm sure Kevin will tell the president, is that if he does raise rates, he may actually get lower long-term rates in response to higher Fed rates. And we know that because when the market was selling off this spring, break-even rates were rising and real rates were rising. But recently, when the market started to come around to view the Fed's going to hike rates, you know what happened to break-even rates? They've come down. So if the Fed hikes and keeps credibility, those longer rates, and that's what the president and what homeowners and businesses care most about, they may actually fall.
All right, we'll leave it on that note. Joe Lavornia, of course, former official at the Treasury Department in the second Trump term, now chief economist at SMB Niga Americas. Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to the Balance of Power podcast. Make sure to subscribe if you haven't already at Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And you can find us live every weekday from Washington, D.C. at noontime Eastern at Bloomberg.com.